Papa, do you wanna build a snowman? Olaf, can you hear me? That's weird. They do sound the same.
They do.
They sound the same. Hello, Pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest in our series of spoiler specials. This one is dedicated to Deadpool 2. And as such, we're calling this the Deadpool 2 spoiler special. That's just lazy writing. Now, if you listened to last week's regular podcast, you'll know that we were meant to record this with Dan Jolin. Unfortunately, we recorded that podcast in a particularly high wind and, well, I'm afraid Dan didn't make it. So shirt cocking it with me over the next hour or so to discuss the ins and outs and the ins and outs and ins and outs of the latest Wade Wilson escapade. Our three colleagues of such lethal cunning, our very own X-Force, if you will, or B-Force, because frankly you're all the B-team.
Hey.
First up we have our very own Domino, not because she's lucky, but because she falls over a lot. It's like dominoes. It's Helen O'Hara.
Uh-huh.
You should have heard the other one.
That's fair. I don't want to hear the other
one. Not hear the other one.
I did fall over that one time and break my arm, so, you know,
yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, okay. You did, didn't you?
Yeah.
You did do that, yeah. Next up, we have our very own Cable. Well, could be Cable. He's a grumpy warrior. May not be from the future, but he's certainly grumpy. Then again, he may just be a major A-lister in disguise. It's very, very hard to tell. Or most likely, he's just here to vomit acid all over the place. It's James Dyer.
Hello. I think of myself more as the Peter of this particular group, but, you know.
Nah. Last but not least, it's a Peter of this particular group, a lovable schlub who has excellent facial hair, but will contribute next to nothing. It's Nick Desemlian.
Hello. I saw the ad. And so I just wandered in.
Don't worry, Nick. I won't let anything bad to happen to you, Sugar Bear. It's all good. It's all fine. So there we go.
Sorry, is Sugar Bear the new nickname that you guys have for each other? Instead of neighbour, is it going to be
Nick
Sugar Bear?
Name.
No. It's no. Sugar Bear will never supplant Nabes. Isn't that right,
well,
Nabes?
I call you Treacle Cheeks.
Make this stop.
That's a special Friday night nickname that we should keep off pod. Just keep it off pod.
Okay, Treacle Cheeks.
Oh my god. Anyway, that's the team assembled. But before you hear us blithering idiots talk about Deadpool 2 in great detail, let's hear from one of the key people, if not the key person behind this movie. He is the co-writer of the film, the co-producer of the film, and the star of the film. Yes, it's Deadpool himself, Ryan Rodney Reynolds. And he was in London recently, and I went along to talk to him, and we got pretty spoilerific pretty fast. So this is a reminder. This is a spoiler special. If this is your first time at an Empire Spoiler Special, we go deep, and we go deep pretty quickly. If you want to avoid spoilers, just stop listening. But if you want to listen to the spoilers, hie thee to your nearest cinema, see Deadpool 2, and then come back here. Sounds good? Good deal?
Definitely.
Sounds like a good deal. Right, so those guys are gone. The rest of us can listen to it. Here I am, talking to Ryan Reynolds, and we get into it right at the end of the film. Here we go. Enjoy.
I always remember that Chevy Chase moment when in Fletch, when the doctor sticks his finger up his ass. And,
why are you thinking of that moment?
I have no idea. I'm not comparing you to proctology in any way, shape, or form, Chris.
It's
just in my head.
Yeah.
Bring me the head of Alfredo Garcia.
See what happens.
And a cup of hot fat.
Lots of questions.
Oh, good.
Lots of questions.
Let's dive in.
We are delighted to be joined on this very special Deadpool 2 spoiler special by the star of the film, the co-writer of the film, the producer of the film.
Oh, sounds exhausting.
Is that it?
I think so.
Anything else you did?
I played Deadpool.
You played Deadpool.
Is that part
two? Played Deadpool.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
I haven't seen you since Deadpool 1.
Yes, indeed. I've been lurking.
Yes.
In the dark.
Lurking around
in the shadows.
Dark. I follow you on social media, so I sort of cyberstalk you a little bit.
So. Well, can I just apologize for everything I've tweeted over the last...
No, you're great at it.
Three or four months. Oh,
you're good at
no,
it.
No, you're no, no, great no. at
Some
it.
Some people that, yeah, it's you use the medium in the right way.
Sparingly.
Yeah.
Well, not sparingly, because I tweet 24/7,
yeah,
pretty much.
But so does everybody. I don't, because I'd go to jail if I did that. I feel like I would just totally implode.
I'd love to see your drafts folder.
Oh, don't. Yeah, that's a dangerous, dark place. Oh, God, yeah. There's stuff in there that I've literally removed before going through airport security.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, mine would get me fired, but yours would get you arrested. So
mine would make my life just implode into powder. Yeah.
Excellent. That's good to know. Maybe we'll discuss that another time, but but this is spoiler therapy. So I'm going to get straight into it right away with one of the big questions.
Yeah.
We're going to start at the end of the movie.
Okay.
With the post-credit sting.
Yeah.
Now, Deadpool at the end of the movie is trying to fix the X-Men timeline. Now, I'm saying that that would take a lot longer than the post-credits thing we have here. So was it longer at any point? Or
No, because, you know, Deadpool is an inherently myopic and selfish human being. So Deadpool just took care of his own timeline.
Yeah.
Under the guise of I'm cleaning up all the timelines, this is what he says to Hugh Jackman in that moment. He's not even Wolverine to me anymore. It's just Hugh Jackman. it was just a fun little one-er that we did using... we had a dick of a time trying to get the actual raw footage, though, from X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah.
So we had to go into the... Well, the movie was shot on film. It wasn't shot on digital, so it was harder to get. And even though we were sitting there on the Fox lot, the exact piece of the movie we need had been damaged on the whatever the transfer was. So we had to go to some backup, which was in some, you know, vault somewhere in the middle of the country of the United States. And we ended up finally at the last second inputting it into the movie. And for me, I was literally losing sleep over it, though. I was thinking, oh, my God, how are we going to do this? Am I going to have to call Hugh and ask him to, you know, shoot this chunk that looks exactly like a movie he's already done? I can't think of a worse hell for a human being to do than go, hey, why don't you take the scene from a movie you did 10 years ago and recreate it exactly. So, no, we ended up getting the little piece of footage. And
would you have had to do the whole thing? Would you have had to do the no-mouth Deadpool again?
Ironically, my side was fine.
Your side was fine.
His side, the one shot we needed of him going, you know, Wade... Because he's looking at the, you know, bizarre Baraka pool thing. We just didn't have. Yeah. Yeah.
But was that something that you had wanted to do since 2008, pretty much?
I feel like Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2 are just a corrective answer to all of that anyway. So it's, for me, that cleaned up the timeline kind of perfectly. This extra little thing was just a little bonus for and it was personal for both Wade and myself. So, yeah, felt good.
And what about, I mean, I've never seen this before in a movie where the lead character of the film kills the lead actor.
Executes Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. Now you're sitting here in front of me, so I presume that you're a life model decoy.
Totally fine.
Clone,
totally
whatever.
Fine. Yeah.
That was just makeup and special effects.
Yeah, most of the appearances I make are holograms. This is actually me right here with you, Chris, right now.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, not unlike Celine Dion and many others, I too have a hologram.
Where did that idea come from, to kill yourself?
The entire teaser trailer, the entire tag to the movie, the coda, the after credit sequence, why does it have so many fucking names, was actually initially conceived as a scene with Peter.
Okay.
The whole thing was going to be a scene with Peter, just because we loved Peter.
Yeah.
We loved Rob Delaney's character of Peter. And then at the last minute, we huddled up and we thought, you know what, let's get Peter in there, but let's do some, what if, I think it was Dave Leitch's idea. He sort of felt like, oh, you know, what if we just, wouldn't Wade try somehow, some way to steal that time travel device and bring Vanessa back? I was like, no, we can't bring Vanessa. That's cheating, you know? I was like, wait a second, though. But if we did, so how all the great ideas on the movie start. Somebody suggests something, like sometimes I'll suggest something that's so dumb, and then Rhett and Paul will be like, okay, yes, that is the stupidest idea I've ever heard, but if we added this and this and this, it makes it worthwhile. So David suggested we go back and save Vanessa, and then Rhett, Paul, and I thought, well, okay, fine. If we're going to go back and save Vanessa, let's save Peter, let's kill Baraka Pool, and let's execute Ryan Reynolds. So
seems fair to me.
Yeah, and then suddenly it was like, oh my God, we have the coda. So we shot that in an afternoon, all the chunks of it in an afternoon.
Shit. Okay.
And that was that. Yeah.
Good. So you saved Peter.
We saved Peter, yeah.
Do you save the rest of X-Force?
No, I love that he just completely ignores this marquee cast that he could have saved of useful and wonderful superheroes, but instead went back and said, well, here's the thing, though. I always felt it was important to save Peter just because in the helicopter before we jump out skydiving, I say to him, I'd never let anything happen to you, Sugar Bear. I'm just saying this to impress the other guys. Laird, hit it! And we all jump out of the thing. So I felt like that was a promise that Wade made early on in the movie.
Yeah.
And it was nagging him, so he went back and got Peter.
And the other guys knew what they were getting into. This poor schlub.
Yeah, we can't afford to have the other guys to bring him back. No, they have to remain dead.
That is
one in particular would be very expensive.
Terry Crews, obviously.
Yes, obviously.
All that sweet Brooklyn Nine-Nine cash.
Yes, of course.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I'm still laughing at the X-Force stuff, because that is audacious. You set up this idea that you're introducing this X-Force, and I'm sure that'll still happen, ultimately, just not with these guys.
Yeah.
Where did that idea come from?
It was a moment where we needed something. It was a totally inorganic way to create a scene. We needed a bridge between Deadpool getting out of prison and needing to go after Cable. And we just, it just felt too, like Deadpool just got his ass kicked by Cable.
Yeah.
So he, you know, you don't want to just go right into chasing Cable on the convoy and having that fight with him. And that's how it was originally written. And it was just like, we just needed this breath of air in there. So the fake X-Force is what we called it, fake X-Force. We was actually, if you think about it, it's a totally modular scene in the movie. Like if you cut it out, the movie wouldn't actually change anything. It wouldn't actually change any of the storyline. It was just like this ridiculous, funny thing. And then, so in the initial concepts of it, we were having Wade decides to jump out of the, this is the first draft of it. Wade decides to, you know, assemble this incredible team. We assemble this incredible team. We get up in a helicopter. We're going to go over the drop zone. We're going to jump in. And then we actually land in a minefield. And just every single one of them, one after another, explodes, which is a really funny concept in theory. But, like, why is there a fucking landmine? Like, I don't know. Where do the landmines come from? Who lands in a field of landmines? Like, this isn't, you know, Vietnam. This is an urban city environment. This is there's no business for landmines to be there. So that idea was quickly struck down. And then we just sort of thought it would be fun to do this kind of... you know, sort of Rube Goldberg style, sort of, you know, one grisly death after another and just keep cutting back to Wade as he reacts, you know.
It was the Final Destination 6 I've always wanted.
100%.
It was absolutely last.
Totally inspired by Final Destination.
And you, as you say, you do kill off a number of name actors, including the Vanisher.
Yeah, I know.
One Mr. William Bradley Pitt.
Yes, yes.
How on earth did you get Brad Pitt shot?
Well, you know, I'd met Brad a couple of times in my life. We always had a nice conversation, a nice flow. Dave Leach, our director, little piece of trivia here, was his stunt double for years and years and years.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. Smith as well.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the Mexican. I did a bunch of movies with Brad. And so there was a pre-existing relationship there. But it's the power of just like asking, just writing a letter. So I wrote Brad a letter saying, look, we have this fucking completely stupid role of this guy who's invisible and wordless, like says nothing in the entire movie. He's invisible. We all jump out of an airplane. The only time we see him is 8 frames of footage when he's electrocuted to death, sort of suddenly and quite, you know, unexpectedly. And we think it would be really hilarious if that was the biggest movie star in the world. So he just thought that was funny and said, you know, I'll do it, but you got to, I'll do it for a latte. So I said, I'll bring you a Starbucks, you know, and he said, great. And then I said, the franchise or just one individual cup of coffee? And he said, one individual. I was like, thank you. Cause the former I couldn't do.
Yeah.
And he just came in and, you know, I think he shot for 7 minutes. That was about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We just did a secret little shoot with the skeleton crew on the Fox lot, way after, we were into post-production and everything. And he came in and just gave us his best sort of Buster Keaton look as he's getting electrocuted. And there he was in the movie. We were all kind of walking on sunshine afterwards. We were like, how did that just happen? Brad Pitt just came in for free and gave us one look.
For a latte.
For a latte.
In fairness.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I would do that as well. By the way, if you need someone unknown for the next one, I'm just saying.
I would do unspeakable things for a latte at certain points of my life. So,
and we're back to the draft folder again.
Yes, exactly.
There's a lot of death in this movie, as you might imagine, given that it's Deadpool and he kills a whole bunch of people.
There is.
Deadpool dies in this film for a bit. But his death scene, I loved it because it was Python-esque, because it goes on and on and on.
Thank you for saying Python-esque. I was inspired by Monty Python.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not dead. I'm getting better. Like,
yeah,
kind of thing.
It was this. Yeah. And actually, that is the short version.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
How long? Because I honestly could have watched another half an hour of that.
Oh, that's so nice of you. We had a version that just went on and on and on. I mean, it was like, you know, we kept cutting to the different characters watching him, and eventually their faces go from empathy to just, please die. Like, this is ridiculous. We foreshadow the death at the beginning of the movie, but Wade sort of says at the very outset, I'm dying in this one too. But here's a fun little spoiler fact about that death scene. Is that at the beginning of the movie, he says, fuck Wolverine, you know, hairy motherfucker died in his movie. Well, guess what? I'm dying in this one too. So when Deadpool dies in the third act of Deadpool 2, the music that's playing is actually the Logan death music. It's the exact same music that that was used when Logan died on that very unfortunate tree branch in Logan. Yeah.
Such a poorly positioned branch.
Yeah, it was. And we were all very nervous because we really had to go ask Mangold if he would, the director of Logan, if he would give us this music. And he seemed to get a chuckle out of it. It was like, no problem.
So was the idea to kill Wade? Albeit briefly, was that inspired? Was that pre-Logan, post-Logan? Because it's obviously very direct in the movie. It feels like a very direct response.
What's weird is that most of this script was written pre-Logan and, you know, Avengers and all that stuff. None of those movies had come out yet. So we didn't know much about Logan. I mean, I knew Logan had dire consequences because I'm friends with Hugh. So I knew that was kind of, I had a little tip that was, you know, the end. But yeah, we didn't really know. So we always sort of had planned on Wade having this kind of epic and utterly stupid death scene at the end of the movie and having some fun with that. But we didn't realize that it would kind of resonate in that nice parallel path with Logan. So we actually ended up adding that voiceover at the beginning later on, which is, yeah, the Wolverine.
And the toy, the Logan toy?
Yeah, that was a rush job because we shot, obviously, the movie. Logan came out while we were in production.
Okay.
So we did a quick rush job to see if I could get a music box that that would look like Logan dying and play, you know, Air Supplies, I'm All Out of Love. Or if they could change the lyrics to I'm All Out of Blood, would have been great. But it was a remarkable effort by our props department for that. You know, I still have it, the little music box. It makes me laugh every time I turn it on.
I can imagine. Yeah. I'm ignoring that as well, by the way.
Yeah, I would too. It's probably my mom.
It probably is. I don't know how she got my number, but...
I do. She's single, by the way, Chris.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now I'm interested. Yeah, this could be it. Wouldn't it be weird if I came out as your dad-in-law?
The moment I met you, I wanted to call you dad.
That'd be so weird.
Yeah, that'd be so weird.
But also so right.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I know. It feels good.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so there's, like I say, there's a lot of death in the beginning of the movie. It surprised me. It did surprise me when you kill Vanessa.
Yeah.
Can you talk about where that came from? And as writers, were you and Paul and Rhett wary of a backlash in a way to killing off Vanessa?
Oh, big time. You know, it was a really tough decision because we love that character and we love her. And of course, in the end, inevitably, obviously, spoiler alert, we save her. But we were really worried about that. And, you know, it felt like, in order for Deadpool to kind of function as Deadpool, you need to put him in a position in which he's not just the underdog, but that he's really lost everything. I mean, the character's so outrageous and so obnoxious and so crazy that, you know, if he just kind of had everything and everything sort of was in a good place in his life, you can't really turn up the fun, you know? So the more pain Deadpool's in, the funnier Deadpool can be, or the sort of more ridiculous Deadpool can be, or outlandish. So we really only had the one thing to take.
Yeah.
And that was Vanessa. So it was something we agonized over forever, man. We at one point, we, you know, Wade and Vanessa were going to have a baby, and, you know, that was going to be sort of seeding the tragedy that happens. And, you know, that was just too much. So that was like, we were a page and a half into that version. We were like, nope, no. Let's not do that. So Vanessa was kind of, unfortunately, the only kind of catalyst we had to propel Deadpool into the depths of despair, which is where, you know, Deadpool processes pain through the prism of humor. So you need him to be in as much pain as possible for him to kind of have the adventure that we need to have. So, but it was definitely something we went back and forth on, and boy, did we have had disagreements at different times and disagreements because Rhett, Paul and I are all like brothers, but we all sort of, we all in the end just sort of felt like it was the best and only way to go.
Cause tonally it's a left turn in the film.
Big time.
As well. Yeah. And you go straight into that Bondian credit sequence with that Celine Dion track now.
Of course.
And even the credits acknowledge it, like, holy shit.
What the fuck did you guys just do?
Yeah.
It is a left turn, and it is unexpected, and it is sort of intense, you know, and we just kind of felt like this is a movie that can do that. I don't, you know, we never want to shy away from the emotion, and that's always the bedrock of the movie. And, you know, and that's something that I think people can relate to, pain of losing somebody. And, you know, we just felt like that was a pretty strong place to have our character begin his adventure. So,
because one of the things about Deadpool as well is that, as writers, this must be a problem for you guys. He is largely emotionally invulnerable. but he's also physically invulnerable as well. So can you talk about the challenge? I mean, there's a little bit of an echo of Superman 2 and Spider-Man 2 in that he is depowered for a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
And that he almost wants to walk away from what he is in the movie as well. Is that a challenge for you guys, coming up with ways he can be hurt physically and emotionally?
I mean, it definitely is. And I think that's also sort of speaks to, like, you know, if we're in the position in which we're going to have the opportunity to make more movies in the future featuring Deadpool, that he's in a group or a team, or that's why the X-Force idea is sort of is out there, and that's why we want to make that movie, because, you know, again, you have to take everything away from him in order for him to function. So you want to, you know, you depowering him or giving him some kind of vulnerability is important, because, and I think that's the same dilemma that a lot of superheroes have faced. You know, the difference with Deadpool as opposed to Superman is Superman's virtuous in a sense, and, you know, Deadpool's just this morally flexible asswipe, you know. So you know, a lot of that vulnerability for Deadpool is emotional as opposed to physical.
Yeah.
You know, and the emotional pain, I think, keep that sort of state that he's in is his vulnerability, is sort of what makes him malleable and relatable and all of those things. So, you know, that's always why I've been attracted to Deadpool, is that he's, you know, ostensibly just like a, you know, a kind of a shit heel blubbermouth who's like, you know, also kind of like a, got a good heart, you know. He doesn't represent the, you know, 2018 woke male of the year. He represents a, you know, a dysfunctional douchebag who wants to be a little bit better than he was yesterday, and I find that more interesting than you know, somebody who's just possessive of virtue. And
One of the things that's interesting about the film as well, my reading of it anyway, is that there isn't really a bad guy for Wade to fight. Obviously, there's Juggernaut, and we'll talk about him in a second. And, and Russell is conflicted as well, but not evil as he could have been.
Yeah.
And in a way, Wade almost becomes the conclusion that he's the bad guy. He's the reason why he's feeling the way he is, and he's the thing he needs to overcome. He's the bad guy he needs to overcome, in a way.
Yeah, Wade needs to be selfless. Deadpool has to find some way to actually be selfless. And you know, I like that it touches on that idea that one act of kindness can possibly change the world, and or at least change this group of people's world. And so inevitably Deadpool sort of makes good on the prophecy that he makes early on in the movie. Well, fuck you, Wolverine, I'm dying in this one too, and I'm going to do it to your music, motherfucker. So, you know, but he puts himself in a position of you know, of utter selflessness. And I think that that is important. You know, that's sort of what his, the culmination of his journey. And that's, And it is interesting. We thought it was you know, unique to have a movie that doesn't have the sort of mustache twirling villain. You know, it has a couple of different things that represent massive opposition to Deadpool. One being Cable in the first two acts of the movie. And then, of course, after that, it's Deadpool himself that he needs to overcome. So.
Absolutely. And you don't go near Cable's, how should we say, tangled backstory.
Fuck me. Have you ever read, you ever gone through some of that? I mean, just give yourself a little Wikipedia there of Cable right now, and you'll see what we were looking at.
I started printing it out before I came here, and the printer ran out of paper, so I couldn't do it.
Mind-boggling. It's just huge. Utterly mind-boggling. Yeah, we didn't, we took a, you know, a Cable that we felt was sort of the simplest, most accessible version of him, and pumped him right into Josh Brolin, and that's, that was kind of, that was kind of the best case scenario for us. And I love Cable. I love aspects of so many of his stories, but you really had to cherry pick which ones you used for the film.
And there's other films. Other films.
Yeah, there's other places.
Other things to
explore. In fact, the Deadpool 2 is an introduction to Cable. We don't really know that much about him. You know, there's the idea that he's actually a dead man walking. I mean, he's got this virus and it's killing him slowly. And there's something, you know, there's something in the future for him to play that sort of Doc Holliday tombstone kind of version of a guy who's really got nothing to lose. And, you know, I like that he makes this decision to stick around and maybe clean the shit up a bit. And, see if he can fix a few things before, you know, leaving again. So
I was going to ask where that came from. Was there an iteration of the film where he went back at the end, or did you always have him on the board?
No, we always wanted the two. I mean, Deadpool and Cable in the movie have this sort of pleasing symmetry that they discover, which is that they both have similar backstories. They both had suffered great loss, and they both have an objective that, you know, they're shiftless on. And in the end, they both make this grand sacrifice. And that's Cable's grand sacrifice is to bring, use his last jump to bring Deadpool back. And, you know, we felt like he needed something much more than just for Deadpool. Like, he wouldn't just do this for Deadpool. He would do this because earlier on we seed this idea that 50 years from now, you know, this generation has fucked this earth into a coma. And, you know, Deadpool has one of my favorite lines in the movie, which is he just goes, ah, planets. And I just love it because that's sort of, that to me is in a nutshell Deadpool. He doesn't care about saving the world. He cares about some little thing that, you know, is important to him. Yeah. So it was twofold. Yeah. So he's making the sacrifice cable. It's not really totally clear if the sacrifice is for Deadpool or if it's for the greater good of humanity. Yeah. But I like the idea that future adventures with Deadpool and Cable, you have a character who represents the adult being Cable and Deadpool who represents the immature child. And Cable has an agenda that is actually quite magnanimous and important, whereas Deadpool's agenda, you know, is probably, you know, masturbating to the Weather Channel. So
I was going to say, right up until you said that they are the Jack Walsh and the Duke of superhero movies. Yes. It feels like that, but I don't imagine Charles Grodin masturbating to the Weather Channel.
The day is young. Charles Grodin is still very virile. So
mentioned Juggernaut. I love Juggernaut. Deadpool says Juggernaut is his favorite character. Now, is he speaking for you or are you speaking for him? Where do you stand on Juggernaut?
Well, we all love Juggernaut because nothing can stop the Juggernaut. I just like this idea that there's just this creature out there that is, you know, just fuck off crazy and will do anything for whatever reason he chooses in that moment. So we all love the Juggernaut, and that was kind of, we were all fans of the Juggernaut, and that's where all that stuff comes from. Deadpool's just a huge fan, and I love the idea that he's like, but never meet your heroes, because it turns out he's a bit of a dick.
And he will rip you in half.
And like a lot of dicks, he's as hard as a rock and causes nothing but problems. So we love the Juggernaut. We love that he's, even at the end, he's still like crawling out of that pool at the very end of the movie and, you know, hopefully going to go wreak more havoc. But so the Juggernaut was someone, and again, you know, these movies are, you know, Deadpool 2 is shot for much less money than, most superhero movies would be shot for. So as with every movie, you want to finish on budget and on time, which we did, but barely. So like, we couldn't even afford a voice for Juggernaut. The voice for Juggernaut's me.
Oh shit, really?
Yeah, it's just, I just did it as a kind of a temp, as this sort of like Brooklyn brawler kind of voice that we modulated in post and kind of cranked up and gave it all this bass and reverberation. And in the end, we didn't settle on that just because it was quality. We settled on that because we just didn't have any more budget left for other actors to jump in.
Yeah. How much did Brad Pitt's latte cost?
It must have been a very expensive latte. It was actually mixed with Peruvian panda tears, which were very hard to come by. Milking those out of a panda is very difficult.
So. But fun.
Yeah.
I had written down, ask who does Juggernaut's voice. Look at that, you're way ahead of me.
So I know, it's so disappointing when you find out it's me.
It's good, it's good.
Yeah, I think he's credited at the end as himself.
It is, yeah. And you know, talking about the X-Men timelines, you know, and there's no more Vinnie Jones, he's gone.
Vinnie Jones is gone. We went with the full computerized version. Yeah, sadly. No disrespect to Vinnie Jones.
No disrespect at all, because that man is built like a brick shit house.
Just pummel us into a fine curd cottage cheese like ass pudding, which we do not want.
We do not want. Right, I'll just do some quick fire stuff with you now.
Great.
Because we're being wrapped up.
Oh, okay.
The X-Men cameo. Can you talk us through how that happened?
Yeah, X-Men cameo was just, it was always in the script. It's just this idea that they're, you know, over his shoulder, we're actually getting all these X-Men that are sitting in there. And it was really just an availability thing. We were just lucky enough that the X-Men Dark Phoenix film happened to be shooting in Montreal. So they grabbed a plate of just the cast, by the way, incredibly generous of them to do that, because that's kind of like a freebie for us. And, you know, and they had to probably get in a lot of makeup and different stuff to make that shot happen for us. So it was incredibly kind of them. It was just something we wanted to include just as a sort of a callback to Deadpool 1.
I did think that actually whenever I saw the shot, I was thinking, that's Nick Holt in full beast makeup.
100%.
Yeah. And if he did that just for this.
I like to think that he'd been shooting something else that day. It makes me sleep at night. But yeah.
Nah, he sleeps in the makeup.
Yeah, I would too.
That's what he does. I've always wanted to see Black Tom Cassidy for a reason, because he's an Irish guy. I just want that sort of, I just want to see an Irish superhero, or supervillain rather.
Supervillain, yeah.
And then you use him for a brilliant running gag all the way through the film. Now, where does Black Tom Cassidy come from?
Black Tom was just in the movie as a supervillain who has incredible powers and all sorts of stuff. It was the fucking studio that said, you guys are over budget. You can't afford this whole... So his whole storyline got trimmed way back. And Jack Kessy, who played him, who's such a sport, you know, stayed on in the role. I called Jack and I was like, Jack, I hate to tell you this, man, that, you know, we're cutting out most of Black Tom. And this is before we shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said to him, if you want to play the role still, it's like 3 or 4 days and, you know, work. Obviously, if you want to duck out, I totally understand. He was like, no, I'm in. He was so sweet to do it because he's an amazing actor. And yeah, so Black Tom casted. But we did end up using his name for kind of a running joke in the movie where Deadpool sort of falsely accuses Cable of being racist. And, you know, yeah, we sort of thought that was somewhat ridiculous. Yeah, so
it worked. Not? So just very, very quickly, the Martha gag. Are you ready for the wrath of DC fans? Because let me tell you from experience, they don't like that joke.
No, they don't. I'm sure they really don't. Yeah, the Martha gag. I don't know. It's a perfectly Deadpool moment. I think Deadpool's, you know, I think he's willing to break a few eggs to make that omelet. So, yeah, I guess, you know, by the time they're listening to this, I'm probably already dead. What can you say?
Such a shame. Ryan Reynolds,
I didn't write that joke. That's what I'll say that one. That's joke I didn't write.
Oh, yeah. Try and backtrack now. Yeah, vehicle exactly. Reversing. No, it's not going to work.
I wrote it and I love it.
I spotted the Christopher Plummer gag on the news screen.
Yeah.
Did he turn down a role in Deadpool 2? Did you try and go full meta and have him show up halfway
through?
We
did not. We were way into post by that point. We just thought we'd just throw it up there on the crawl and, you know, see what happens. I'm surprised anyone ever saw it.
I saw it. I'm eagle-eyed.
You're an eagle-eyed.
Eagle-eyed.
Eagle-eyed Chris Hewitt.
Has anyone told you looked like Ryan Reynolds, by the way?
I've been told Gosling. I've been told O'Neill, but never Reynolds. Oh, yeah.
Very last thing. The Juggernaut rips Deadpool in half. Deadpool grows back his lower half of the body. He gives us a basic instinct moment.
Yes.
Whose tiny penis is that? Because I don't remember giving you permission to use it.
No. Very nice. That tiny penis was invented in a computer. But it was my rationale because, you know, the America, we have the MPAA, right? So yeah. I was thinking, oh, God, they're going to come down on us because we're showing, you know, this baby penis at some point, which I don't think you could do. But then my thought was, well, hold on a second. That's not a baby penis. That's Wade's penis.
Yeah.
Wade is a grown-ass adult who just happens to have tiny legs and a little tiny penis.
Happens.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely. Right? Life goes on.
Life goes on. Yeah. So there you go. It's in the computer.
We've manufactured Chris's penis and put it on to Deadpool 2. I'm so sorry.
So what's my excuse in real life?
Yeah.
I don't know. God. Anyway.
I just got Braille down there. It's just this tiny little short story, like a little haiku, you know. But I've had 2 children, so I guess I've fulfilled the genetic paradigm.
It works. It's fine. Yeah. It's all good. And on that bombshell, Ryan Reynolds, it's been a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you,
Chris. How did you find supporter therapy?
I love it.
Yeah.
I feel like a burden has been lifted. Thank you.
Fantastic. Go. Run free. Okay, so that was Ryan Reynolds. And now let us talk about Deadpool 2. Where do we stand in this film? Helen, James, you're both in the we like it a lot camp. Is as good as the first film? Not as good as the first film? Where are you?
I'm very much on the as good in a different way, I think, roughly.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's fair. I didn't think it was as good as the first film, but actually I think you're right. It is. It's better in some ways. It's better constructed. It has some good ideas. I don't think it's as, shall we say, inventively embracing of its R rating as the first one was, because I enjoyed the creative swearing a great deal more. And also felt fresh, I think, because it was different. Yeah. And it was this felt a little expected.
Well, I mean, even the tagline about, you know, you never forget your second time.
Yeah.
You know, do.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I didn't, because I was sandwiched between yourself and Chris, not in a sexy way, but when we were watching the film, as I was when we saw the original Deadpool, and in the same way I had the two of you howling with mirth all the way through, and me, enemy of fun and comedy, sat there kind of stony-faced and just sort of went, yes. This is amusing.
We are basically your helper dogs. Yeah. We show you when a human being would laugh.
I'm like, yes, there is comedy. I find this very funny.
Which for me, given that this movie is puerile and juvenile, was pretty much right from the off for me. Yeah. Even if the first 20 minutes or so is slow to get going. But before we get into that, Nick Desemlian's presence in this booth is interesting to me because you're not quite on the same page as the three of us, are you?
Not particularly. I did think this film was better than the first one, but in the way that one pencil is better than another pencil, in that there is ultimately they're just pencils, and it's not really something to get that excited.
And you write with pens, is this what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Nick's a sophisticate.
He is, and he does the crossword in pen, so you know he's good.
Yeah, that was a very good simile I just used, the pencil thing.
It was a metaphor, yeah. But sure.
Okay.
Wasn't the sharpest.
It was terrible. Hey.
But what I'm trying to say is that I don't love these films.
Okay.
And I think that this one...
And he's not sure what he's doing here.
I'm never sure what I'm doing here. But yeah, I think there were better jokes in here. There were some stuff that really made me laugh. I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again. I saw the first one once, and I feel like that was enough. I think what it comes down to is I don't love this character. I find him quite grating.
You get enough of loud-mouthed cretins.
I sit near you in the office, so I'm done in that respect.
But. Yeah, okay.
But there is some very funny stuff in this.
Should we start with a sequence that continues to make me laugh? As I said when I brown-nosed Ryan Reynolds in the interview there, which is the fuck it, this is a spoiler special. We can start what we like. Let's start with the death of X-Force, the tragic death of X-Force, which for me is hands down the funniest sequence I've seen in the major movie for a long, long time, and is just it's just brilliant. And the second you begin to know where it's going, the laughs just build and build and build. And here's how good that sequence is. It's so funny that they kill Peter and you don't really mind.
It is. I mean, I wasn't 100% as on board with that sequence just because, you know, you will kill Terry Crews and I'm going to have a problem with that. Like, that's not okay. Even in Jess, that's not okay.
I have really mixed feelings. I think it is very funny. It is probably the funniest sequence in the film, apart from the post-credit stuff. But it's, at the same time, you want to see more of those. You definitely want to see more of Terry Crews. You want to see more of Peter. I wish they had killed off everyone but Peter and just had Deadpool and Peter. Mm. That would have been funny.
I know what you mean. It was a really funny sequence, but I was like, oh, so we're done with the team now. Like, I really wanted to see where that was going.
That's what I loved about it, the fact that conceptually, and you know, as Ryan Reynolds said in the interview, that X-Force in this movie was really just an idea they came up with quite late in the day because they needed to bridge from the fight with Cable in the icebox to the convoy with Cable, and they didn't really know how to do that. And so they thought, oh, let's do X-Force. And the idea of killing him off is just, you know, it's not a new idea. Mm. One of my favourite gags in MacGruber is when he's walking towards his team in the van and they all get killed and it's just really funny. Yeah. Or
and it has been done in the X-Men a bit.
Yeah.
Actually, it has a long history. The when they put together the new X-Men team, which introduced most of the current lineup.
Yeah.
And they immediately killed.
Oh, I can't remember that.
But is Thunderbird?
Yes.
And Thunderbird, yes. There's a running joke of another X-Men character called Cricket? He's got cricket legs or something.
All giant size.
Yeah, giant size X-Men. Yeah, that back.
But a lot of X-Force are quite expendable as well.
Yes, but there's been a couple of characters like that, is what I mean, in the X-Men universe. So there's another guy with, I think, robotic cricket legs, and there's been like three different incarnations, and all of them have died in the issue in which they were introduced. All of them, which I enjoy.
But I just thought it was a really fun idea, especially since so much of the marketing in this movie was built around the idea of X-Force. And then suddenly they're introduced in the film, very, very funny, and then they're bumped off. And we'll get another X-Force down the line, and those guys will know what they're doing. And it's fine. But what I also like, this movie has a very interesting attitude towards deaths of characters, and Wade Wilson's utterly flippant, oh well, attitude towards the death of these people is in complete contrast.
Apart from Peter.
Yeah. Even then, he can't remember what his name is. He's like, oh, Paul's dead. Oh, no, Peter. Oh, is that his name? Yeah, Peter. And only at the end does he get him back. And this didn't come up with Ryan Reynolds, but I do wonder if Peter's sudden resurrection was a result of the love for Peter, the outpouring of love for Peter that was based entirely on that last trailer.
Yeah.
I encourage everyone to go on Twitter and look up Peter's Twitter account. I'm sure Rob Delaney has created it. He obviously plays Peter, but... and is a very funny man, but it's genius. I went down the rabbit hole and was on that Twitter going right back to the beginning. And he started it before the trailer came out. Mm. So it's awesome. It's hilarious. He's very into bees.
He turned up at the premiere in London. Or not premiere, but like it was a fan screening and all of the cast turned up. And then he was in the audience and was called down by, he was like, Ryan Reynolds was sort of squinting at the crowd going, Peter, is that you? And he came down and gave them all a pot of honey each.
Rob Delaney appeared in character.
In character.
That's amazing.
As Peter. And then took over the mic and took over essentially the whole screening for about five minutes. So that was fun.
He's a glorious creation. And if you go on the Twitter account and just look at who he's following, even that is funny. It's a work of art.
All right. Maybe we'll do it. As you guys bore me, I will go onto Twitter and check out Rob Delaney's account. No, of course you won't bore me. It'll be brilliant. I love Peter, but I also thought, I don't know, because whenever I first saw him in the trailer, I was like, oh, in fact, even said, you know, using that old Daryl from The Walking Dead hashtag, if they kill Peter, we riot. But I did get a feeling that he wouldn't be long for this world, given that he is just a bloke with a moustache. That's all
he has.
It's a
really good moustache, though.
Yeah, it is.
Because I remember I interviewed the writers for this, Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick for the magazine, and I asked him, was he Peter Wisdom, you know, that character in the comic books? Because the first image of him in Second Treader was him looking really cool, that catfish photograph, looking really cool and lean and ripped and chiseled. And I thought he was going to be like a badass liaison to X-Force, some sort of government guy. But no, he's just Peter. Hi, how's it going? And I love that he tries to save Zeitgeist. But I don't think Peter is a guy who connects well with Zeitgeist somehow. So, yeah.
I hope he turns up in Avengers 4. Only Peter can stop
save
Thanos.
The world. Yeah. Well, I want to say something, but to ask this question would be a spoiler for Avengers. So do you want to skip ahead if you haven't seen Avengers?
We're going to have
listeners.
Okay, yeah, this is a spoiler. This is an Avengers Infinity War spoiler special within a spoiler
very,
special.
Very small. I'll try to be quick. Okay. It's just, but I think there's a contrast to be made here.
Okay.
And do you think that there's an element of sort of catharsis in seeing the death of a bunch of superheroes played for laughs right after you've just watched Infinity War within a couple of weeks?
Quite possibly. I mean, it's not been a good time to be a guy called Peter in a superhero film.
It really hasn't. No, that is 3 for 3.
3 for 3, turned into dust, vomited on by, you know, Pennywise, and that's it. You're done. Until you come back at the very, very end.
Exactly.
And of course, I really like the fact that they threw away the Brad Pitt cameo as well. That was really fun.
Talk to us about cameos, Chris.
Okay. All right. So we talk about the Dickie Greenleaf thing.
Let's
talk about Dickie Greenleaf.
Have you found definitive confirmation of this?
No, I haven't found definitive confirmation. I have asked a source, and that source obfuscated somewhat.
Really?
Yes.
If it wasn't true, they'd have shut it down, surely.
Well, yeah, this is a tricky one. I can't really... Anyway, all right. So I was watching it for the second time, and obviously the Brad Pitt cameo is fairly out there. Mm-hmm. One of the cameos were in the film of the
Alan
X-Men.
Alan Tudyk, I guess.
Yeah,
Alan Tudyk, I guess, is a cameo.
It's kind of a cameo, isn't he?
Alan Tudyk is the perfect person to be in that scene because you're watching that scene and you're thinking, are we boring you, James?
Is it because you're
all right? I mean, I don't want to teach you microphone etiquette 6 years into the podcast life, but. Yawning on microphone, what the fuck?
He hasn't done a fill and start headbutting.
Yeah, just scratching his beard.
Scratching his beard against
Sorry.
Are you okay? Are we interrupting your yawning session? Are you all right?
I believe I'm fine.
Alan Tudyk is the perfect sleeper cameo for that sequence because you're watching it going, is that Alan Tudyk? Mm. Is that Alan Tudyk?
And is this a throwback to Tucker and Dale versus Evil?
I thought the other guy was going to be the other guy.
Yeah.
Whoever the other guy is from that film. And then you're watching the credits and you go, hey, was Alan Tudyk? Why did they get Alan Tudyk to do one line and they don't even see his face?
To distract you from Dickie Greenleaf.
To distract you from Dickie Greenleaf.
I know
precisely.
Dickie when I see him.
So the other redneck guy who has the big monologue is credited as Dickie Greenleaf. Now, here's the thing. There is no actor under that name, Dickie Greenleaf.
But there is.
Well, okay. So, Dickie Greenleaf is a character in The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes.
He is played in the Anthony Minghella version by Jude Law.
Yep.
But I have suspicions that, well, it's either Jude Law under there, under Mountains of Prosthetics, right?
Yeah, doing a voice we've never heard him do before.
I think it's Matt Damon.
Well, that would be thematically consistent, though, with The Talented Mr. Ripley, wasn't it? Because he wanted to take over Dickie's life. And now he has, all these years later.
So so we think that Ryan Reynolds and everyone, they were not aware that was Matt Damon. They thought this guy, this young actor, struggling actor called Dickie Greenleaf. And we are blowing this wide open.
He just saw this on LinkedIn. You know, he went
in for
an audition.
Yeah.
He saw the ad and... He has no superpowers of acting or stardom.
Matt Damon.
Yeah.
But they just
I saw someone on Twitter claiming that this was Ryan Reynolds doing a second role. But
no
sense.
Because as people will know, but then again, if for some reason you've skipped the Ryan Reynolds interview, then now it is time for me to reveal that Ryan Reynolds does cameo in the film as well, but as the voice of Juggernaut. I don't know if that's him. But at the same time, it's a kind of a Deadpoolian thing to do, to have the star of the film cameo in his own film but under layers of prosthetics. That would be really weird, but I think the Dickie Greenleaf thing is a red flag. It's a clue, man. It's a clue.
It could be Gwyneth Paltrow, and the reason she isn't credited, right, is because it would be a breach of her Marvel contract.
It would be a breach of her Marvel contract. That's it. Gwyneth Paltrow is Dickie Greenleaf. I think it's Matt Damon. There is a reason I think it's Matt Damon that I cannot reveal in public, but I have reason to suspect it's Matt Damon. My deep throat, my Deadpool deep throat.
No.
My what?
No, what? Definitely not.
Please don't deep throat Deadpool.
Your cable.
But yeah, okay. My Deadpool deep throat took out his cable.
No.
All right. And what? What's wrong with that?
And his Dickie Greenleaf.
Yeah, his Dickie Greenleaf, and really gave me some good X-Force. And I don't know. He wouldn't confirm or deny. I need to pick him up by the ankles and shake him upside down to, you know, extract all that information. No?
No.
Okay. Anyway, I think it's Matt Damon. Okay. Which would make it his second superhero cameo.
Indeed. Within 12 months.
Within 8 months.
Well, okay, but,
yeah.
You know.
Up to Thor Ragnarok.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, clearly he's...
Oh,
someone.
We're spoiling that now as well, are we?
So this is a Thor Ragnarok spoiler special as well. And so he appears as Loki in the play that Loki, who is pretended to be Odin, watches at the beginning of Thor Ragnarok before Thor comes back to Asgard and sets him off on a path which leads him to Earth, where they meet Odin, who then dies and then brings Hela back, and Hela then storms Asgard and then banishes Thor and Loki to
Chris,
Sakaar.
Back to the light.
Yeah. Back to the light. Sorry.
We lost you. We're losing you.
For a second there, oh God.
And should we talk about other cameos?
No. Okay. Yeah, of course. Let's do it.
I mean, in the X-Mansion, there is a genius sight gag where you glimpse the actual X-Men.
The cast of Dark Phoenix.
The cast of Dark Phoenix. Doing their thing, and then they close the door, and that is very funny, I think.
It is.
So, as far as I could tell, do you see who it was? It's McAvoy.
McAvoy.
Holt. Ty Sheridan.
Yep.
I think Sophie Turner's in there.
Yeah, I thought so.
I think Alexandra Shipp as Storm is in there, but she has longer white hair these days than she did in Apocalypse. Who else? Cody Smith-McPhee as Nightcrawler was in there. And I think that's it.
That's all I spotted, anyway.
That was a good.
That was a very fun gag, and of course answers Deadpool's question about which Professor X, Stewart or McAvoy, which he asked in the first film. So this kind of cleared that one up.
Yeah.
Although the timeline is even worse now. Don't get me started.
I mean, should we even try to untangle the timeline of the X-Men universe? Because the Deadpool movies really just fuck it up, don't they? Even, you know, at the end of the movie, he's gone back and he's trying to, he's trying to clean up the timelines. But he's kind of making it worse in a weird way. But yeah, so it's James McAvoy in this universe, but it will be Patrick Stewart at some point. But Wade Wilson is aware of Patrick Stewart playing Professor X, which is why he said this stinks, Cerebro stinks of Patrick Stewart. And so the X-Men movies exist in this world. This was my theory in the first movie, that the X-Men movies exist in this world. This is our world.
I think he's pan-dimensional.
But, yeah, he's pan-dimensional, like Cliff Richard. All right, so we're going to take a couple of questions now from listeners who sent them into my DMs, but actually, weirdly, not that many. But I kind of feel that this isn't the sort of movie in which people get entangled in plot shenanigans.
It's not plot heavy, is it?
Well, this is the weird thing about this film. It is plot heavy, and it does have a lot of stuff that happens. A lot of heavy emotional lifting happens in this movie. But I'm also of the mind that I don't really need that for my Deadpool movies.
It's plot heavy, but the plot is chaotic.
Yeah.
And the character is chaotic, so it doesn't entirely matter.
The main plot development, though, that kicks us off is the fridging sequence, isn't it?
Well, James, it is almost as if you have read my mind and indeed Eamon Warman's question. At A. Warman on Twitter, did Vanessa's fridging and unfridging annoy you as much as it did me? And in fairness, a few people have sent in that question as well. Now, I didn't use the word fridging when I described this to Ryan Reynolds, but certainly we did talk about the thought process as it went through their minds and before they did it. But the word fridging is interesting because I Googled this. Helen, you'd be proud of me.
I am.
Fridging is actually named after an act that happened, that originated in a Green Lantern comic.
Yes.
So it's all coming full circle.
Helen, explain this to me.
Involved a fridge.
It did literally involve a fridge. One of the Green Lanterns came home to find his girlfriend's dead body stuffed in his fridge.
Oh, come on.
It's a disappointing plot turn in this film, I think.
Yeah, it's disappointing because it is vastly, vastly overused in comics, but not just in comics, in the wider world. So for those of you who missed the weekly episode where we talked about this, fridging actually has a very specific meaning as originally formulated by Gail Simone, the writer who talked about it, which was not just the killing of female characters or gay characters. Actually, it happens a lot to them as well.
Or fridges.
Not so much, Chris, no.
No, I didn't go.
But it was the killing. It's the killing of these characters to give a straight white male hero, usually white, male hero, a reason to feel something. Because they're so tough that they, you know, there's no trauma that can possibly hurt them except it happening to another person. And the problem with this device, and as originally sort of written, this was not just a problem of killing them off to give a man a reason to feel, but also bringing them back depowered. Whereas if a male character like Robin was killed off, he always comes back stronger. He comes back with some mystical new ability, and that never ever seemed to happen to the other characters.
So what you're saying is you need an instant to land the hero in the sit.
Honestly, whenever the...
Well, you really smagged that up, James. Oh.
Damn it!
Is this fridge humour?
It is. It's fridge humour.
Oh, it's they come have, to this. They have dared to Frigidaire.
Yeah. Let me freeze the...
yeah, we've left you with Sanusi. I mean,
yeah, there's nothing to do with that. Maybe a whirlpool.
I've got nothing. The issue I've kind of got with it is that Deadpool is obviously this very... He's always very meta, and he's referencing stuff and making fun of stuff as it goes, and... It was like with the Vinnie Jones Juggernaut joke. It seemed like there's such an obvious thing for him to comment on, and he doesn't comment on it. He doesn't comment on Vinnie Jones either, which was my point. Is
that
he
was
should
a surprise,
have,
actually. I agree,
you know,
yeah.
We have a truly awful Juggernaut already.
But no, I agree. I think, the problem in this specific instance, there's twofold problem. You're right. So the first problem is just that this is an overworked trope that is just so tiresome and so belittling of your female characters. If you've gone to the trouble of giving this woman a character and a personality, which I think they did in the first film, then killing her off for what seems like a really cheap emotional beat is irritating. And actually, it's almost worse. You're right, it is almost worse that they bring her back in the way that they do. Literally, more than halfway through the credits, when half of the audience will have left. So she turns up in a Deadpool 3, half the audience are going to be like, what the fuck, man? She was dead. They're genuinely, that is a genuine storytelling problem that they have for Deadpool 3, I think. If there is one, and let's be honest, there's going to be one. So storytelling-wise, it's not great. It's tired. It's boring. Second of all, the problem is, as you say, like, Deadpool is not meant to be a guy who is serious about stuff, and it is weird for him to be carrying this giant weight through those first, and I think that's why the first 20 minutes of the film just are like,
tonally it's all heavy. Over the place because you're not sure whether you should be depressed or laughing. It doesn't quite suit the tone of the film at all, and frankly it bummed me out massively.
It was a really strange one going in, because even I couldn't even enjoy the Bondian title sequence as much as they clearly want you to, with the Celine Dion song, and
which is amazing.
Holy shit!
It is amazing.
Kill her? You know, all that sort of stuff. Because I thought they were going to either walk it back very quickly within the confines of the main movie, or we were going to have Wade commenting on it. I mean, he calls out lazy writing two or three times throughout the film. I thought he would do that, and they would have some fun, if it's possible, with the idea that they fridged Vanessa. But no, they didn't. Now, of course, this is the second time. This is the third movie directed by David Leitch. John Wick does pretty much the same thing, although that you know, Bridget Moynihan's character is dead before the movie even begins. In between, he's made Atomic Blonde.
The dog gets fridged.
You got Famine, Feast, and then Famine, I guess. So we can expect Hobbs and Shaw to be a feminist masterpiece.
Well, Atomic Blonde, he also killed the girlfriend.
But he also kills the boyfriend at the beginning.
This is an Atomic Blonde spoiler special.
So this is an Atomic Blonde spoiler special. No, I'm so sorry about this. So at the beginning of Atomic Blonde, the boyfriend gets killed.
Should we see how many other films we can ruin in this spoiler special?
We're doing well.
I just think it's overused. So I just saw that and was immediately like, okay.
Yeah. But even without that, though, I thought the first 20 minutes was slow to get going. It was slow to really find its feet. For me, the movie really kicks into gear and really becomes funny with the arrival, weirdly, of Cable. But really, it's a moment that X-Force comes into being.
I agree.
From that moment, Deadpool almost forgets that he's grieving about his girlfriend, and he just is Deadpool again. And I could watch that guy all day long. riffing with those characters, having fun.
Yeah.
I love the sequence where they're in Blind Al's apartment and Cable's behind him. That's probably my second or third best scene in the film. Really, really funny stuff. It's an interesting one. Ryan Reynolds in the interview said that they felt they needed to do something to put him into a dark place, and maybe they could have looked around and looked for someone else who could have put him in a dark place. I mean, if you kill T.J. Miller, maybe off screen a lot of people celebrate, but I'm not so sure within the movie that Weasel has the same emotional impact. Maybe Blind Al. You could have maybe done something to Blind Al and pushed Wade into that place. But maybe they didn't want to push him into a place where he just wanted revenge. I mean, there's a really interesting notion in the film. I mean, it's a genuinely interesting notion. You know, he says that, because there's no real bad guy in this movie. There's no real villain in this in this film. Cable is introduced as an antagonist.
Eddie Marsan.
Eddie Marsan, but, he's barely in it. But there's no real bad guy in this film. And the bad guy of the film, ultimately, from Wade Wilson's perspective, is himself. He blames himself. He says, he says to Colossus, one of the guys responsible for Vanessa's death got away. It was me. And so that's kind of interesting in terms of how the film deals with grief and with loss and with that feeling that, this is not a character going on a vengeful trip like John Wick or like Liam Neeson in the Taken movies. This is a guy who's a bit lost, and then something gives him that purpose to get back in the game, and that thing is X-Force. That thing is Peter's mustache.
So X-Force in this case is the puppy from John Wick.
Yes.
Wow.
Should we go for that? A metaphor.
I also have a little bit of issue with Colossus, just because I really like him as an X-Men in the comics, and I feel like the movies have never entirely given him his due, probably because he's really expensive, basically. Yeah. But the X-Men movies, they always had him kind of in the background, a couple of scenes. He's got that great couple of scenes in X2, but he's never had his due, and I feel like he is used so much as a little bit of a punchline by Deadpool. Now there's good Colossus stuff in there as well, don't get me wrong, but he's a little bit too much of a punchline to really give me the Colossus hit that I want.
I enjoyed Colossus versus Juggernaut.
Yeah, that
I especially
was fun.
Enjoyed the choral introduction of Juggernaut, which isn't on the soundtrack, I don't think.
Is it
on the
soundtrack?
It is.
It is. Thank God for that. Yeah, that I want that soundtrack simply for that.
Holy shit balls!
That's the reason why the soundtrack, I believe, is the only orchestral score. It's the first orchestral score to be issued with a parental advisory.
Amazing. Amazing.
The shitball song is amazing.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's the motherfucking juggernaut. Isn't it? That's the lyrics. It's the juggernaut. Holy shit, it's a juggernaut. And it's really good.
Yeah.
I also like that they threw in a really ridiculous aspect of Juggernaut's backstory, just casually, that he's Professor X's brother. Well, adoptive brother, but stepbrother? I forget.
Half-brother.
Half-brother, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's still ridiculous, and it still makes me laugh.
Yeah. Anyone else on Colossus? What do we think of him?
He's fine. I just again, it's the X-Force thing. I just really, those characters felt so fresh and fun, and then they get wiped out and you're left with not, in my view, particularly great characters. I had the same kind of problem with Negasonic
Teenage Warhead
and her new girlfriend
Yukio.
I just think, they're okay. They're no Peter.
They are no, well, who is?
No.
And few people are Peter.
What's Terry Crews' name?
He was Bedlam.
Bedlam.
Pennywise was Sidegeist. Brad Pitt was the Vanisher.
Yeah.
And Sazie Beats is Domino. And the only one who...
I like Domino a lot.
Makes it up. Domino for me I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's loads of fun. But I honestly loved Cable. I thought Cable was great. I know this should come as no huge shock to you from me, but I did think Cable was fantastic.
I do have one note about Cable. There's a point, I think, where Deadpool calls him John Connor, and that doesn't really work as a Terminator reference because he should call him the Terminator.
He has a red eye and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. He makes a solid point.
Or
Kyle Reese, just
came
anyone
back from
who
the future
goes back.
To kill a kid.
Yeah. I mean, Ricky Baker is the John Connor, if anyone.
Ricky Baker.
I guess maybe he's talking about it as, John Connor is a soldier in the future, and he's a soldier in the future. But you're right.
I think it's just funnier, isn't it, to say John Connor than to say Terminator.
Or T-1000.
Yeah.
Well, at least he calls him One-Eyed Willy, which made me laugh a lot.
That's funny.
That was a super good reference. Deep dive into early Brolin filmmaking.
Where does Wade Wilson get the time to immerse himself in pop culture?
Pan-dimensional, I'm telling you.
Clearly, he's a fan of all this stuff. He likes the Winter Soldier. He likes...
Yentl.
He likes Yentl.
Yentl.
I should have asked.
Yentl.
You know, was that because Barbara Streisand is Josh Brolin's stepmother? I should have asked that.
Let's assume that it is. I mean, it's a good film. It won her a Golden Globe.
But Deadpool's just a diva fan, isn't he? Because he loves Celine Dion, Barbara Streisand, you know.
I really can't express enough how delighted I am with the Celine Dion music video for this film. I really cannot sum that up enough. Celine Dion has passed through in the last couple of years the give a fuck stage of her career and gone into full on does not give a fuck stage, and she has become hilarious. Genuinely a hilarious woman. I have so much time for her.
Soundtrack's really great in this film. Genuinely, the soundtrack's really great, and you know, it starts all out of love. And you know, he's obviously cut up about George Michael dying, as we all were. And
thank God we still have both.
That's a great joke. That's a great joke. I mean, that's one of the
best
jokes.
Is it too soon?
I don't know. I think it was just about on the cusp of it's okay. But you know, it's got the acoustic aha take on me.
Yeah.
And of course,
9 to 5 by Dolly Parton. One of the great, great film themes.
The Pina Colada song. Escape, the Pina Colada song, which, of course, in Guardians of the Galaxy, and that's playing in the sequence where Dickie Greenleaf and Alan Tudyk are attacked by Cable.
Yeah.
And I almost thought to myself, hang on a second, is the song a clue to who's under the prosthetics? Is it Chris Pratt? Is this the way that Chris Pratt has got around things and he's cameoing in Deadpool as well? But no, I still think it's Matt Damon.
There's some AC/DC on the soundtrack in the skydiving sequence.
I know, but you gotta have one stinker in there, right?
Come on. Aww. Come on, take that back.
Helen would quite apologize. Heartily singing along to Cher.
Oh, yeah, If I Could Turn Back Time is one of the all-time greats. I make no apologies. Also, Cher is an extremely easy person to sing in karaoke. She has a very small range. It happens to match with my own range, so if I'm given the opportunity, I will always sing Cher.
You've got a good range.
I don't have a huge range. I really don't.
You don't have a huge range?
No.
You're not like a Roy Orbison octaves?
I'm a mezzo. I'm not a full soprano.
Actually, we have a question.
Yes, please.
This is from Paul F. O'Regan, and you mentioned this. I think you mentioned this, Jimbo, already. What do you think the chances are of future X movies or other big franchise movies in general following in Deadpool's example and including LGBT characters? I'd love to see it happen, but it doesn't seem likely anytime soon. Thanks. I think he means Thanos. No, thanks. A genuine thanks.
I would hope so. I think the whole Negasonic Teenage Warhead element is a little underused in this. I'd like to have seen more of her and Yukio. But it was
that sounds wrong.
Yeah, that did sound wrong. That's not what I meant at all. I would have liked to have seen no. I would have liked them to have had more screen time.
There we go.
That would have been good. But no, it's great to have them in there. She's a fun character. Yeah. I'm just not sure in this one they really knew what to do with her.
Yeah, she doesn't do much apart from wave at Wade.
Yeah.
I think it is inevitable that that's changing. Mm. I think what we're seeing at the moment is a lot of franchises saying off-screen things that they won't commit to on-screen.
Yeah.
So obviously Fantastic Beasts, obviously the recent discussion of Lando in Solo.
Mm.
But
he's pan-dimensional too.
He is pan-dimensional. I believe that about him. But they're not necessarily willing to commit to that sort of in canon on screen, and I think that's going to give way pretty quickly.
I mean, God Almighty, it's the '90s for God's sake. Let's just embrace it. Let's just go for it.
You're so right.
Yeah,
Stephen Bucky, Avengers 4, it's happening. It is on.
I must admit, and I watched The Winter Soldier or the end of The Winter Soldier because I was through again last night, and it is absolutely fizzing with sexual tension.
It really is, I'm telling you.
It really is.
Yeah, I think that will change in the future, definitely. Mm. But even with Solo, they're kind of walking around, aren't they? They're kind of going, in the future we might be able to write an LGBT character and, well, you know, as someone said on Twitter, I think it might be Joe Robinson, actually. Well, just write one. Just write one, dude. Yeah. It's fine. And have them do something. You know, because it feels a little bit like window dressing in this movie. Mm-hmm. But, you know. All right, so Liam C112 asks, Cable decides to stay put at the end and doesn't go back to his family. Doesn't that mean his daughter will never be conceived and he's effectively killed her?
No, because he went back at a point after she was born.
Precisely. Exactly what I replied to him on DM.
Yes.
Now we can talk Cable a little bit more, actually. What do we make of Cable overall, but what do we make of his decision to stay behind at the end and to save Wade?
I liked his gun. Did you notice it went up to 11?
Yeah.
I did. His settings. That was cool. He was cool. I like Cable a lot. I think the character was executed very well.
Yeah, because he's a very predictable, been there, done that character in a way, right? He's, you know, Every time travel movie pretty much has one of those guys, and yet he kind of feels interesting and kind of kept you guessing if you didn't know what was happening, which we probably did. Yeah. But
he's got a lot of cool weapons, hasn't he? He's got that really cool shield. Yeah. He's got the gun that does a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the motivation for him doing that, I mean, makes no logical sense whatsoever, because you just wouldn't. But it's kind of a, hey, we want to keep this guy around because we might want to use him again. And really, that's the motivation. Let's be honest.
Well, I think it's not just saving Deadpool at the end, is it? It's like, I may as well stay here and try and save the world a bit while I'm at it.
Instead of going back to see my family.
Instead of going back to
maybe save
rubbish.
Himself.
Oh my God, so deep.
It's so profound.
But you think about it, Cable's wife and kid are fridged at the beginning of his storyline as well. And
oh,
so
he
comes back in time and they become fridge buddies.
But like, genuinely, it's not that this is the problem with this trope. It's not that, oh, one character that we like has been killed.
Yeah.
It is so pervasive. It is everywhere. And that's why it becomes a little bit wearisome.
Helen, it sounds to me like you don't like this particular trope. You perhaps would not describe yourself as a fridge magnet.
Well, that makes no sense.
God.
Can we have a joke intervention?
I
mean,
I was thinking about... fuck it, you know what? I'm going to make one that does make sense. Do you think that Cable is attracted to Deadpool because he's a fridge magnet?
Chris, you need to go to the cooler.
You're not sending me to the cooler.
I need to go to the icebox and think about what I've done. That's a fucking good joke, you guys. That's a good joke.
Oh, okay.
You kill me. Why don't you yawn again? Do you like Cable?
I do. I like Cable a lot. Cable. I'm Team Cable in the same way that I'm Team Thanos.
My God.
You're the Cable guy.
I am the Cable guy.
He only sounds like Thanos once in this movie.
And he gets called Thanos, but you can hear it very clearly in the trailer. When we saw the film, it felt a bit muddy in the mix. You couldn't really make it out so well. So I don't know if that's just where we saw it.
I thought it was a different line in the film to the trailer.
Yeah, there's a few times
pump
where they
didn't take. Yeah.
Different lines.
Pump the hate breaks?
pump the hate breaks, Thanos. Yeah.
That's funny.
What's a hate break?
Well, it's a break of hate. Don't your brakes in your car. You pump the brakes of your car. Okay. And if you apply hate to those brakes, they become hate brakes.
Okay.
No, you're stopping the hate. Like, instead of stopping the wheels, you're stopping the hate.
Yeah, but they're brakes of hate. So, but he's pumping them, then there's more hate.
No, what? No. He's stopping the hate when he pumps the hate brakes.
Yes.
They're brakes that apply to hate. They are not
pump
brakes made
brakes.
Of hate.
Yes.
Pump the hate brakes, Thanos.
Right.
I've got it.
There we go. The penny drops.
What do we think about the fact that this isn't really the Cable from the comics yet? He's got things like the technovirus, he's got the eye, he's got the big gun, the certain attitude. But
Deadpool is exempt from all, you know, comic chronology, mythology. It is very much its own mental thing. So,
also, I enjoy that we are bringing in the word technovirus, because that was always one of my favourite ridiculous 90s developments.
Love a technovirus. I like the fact that they brought in the fact that Shatterstar is from the Mojoverse and has that interesting coloured blood.
Mm.
Shatterstar is a dreadful character, and I celebrate his death.
Well, clearly someone at, you know, Fox HQ agrees with you, so, yeah. But no, the technovirus is, of course, the reason that Cable has all those crazy sinews made out of, you know, bits of pipe.
Yeah, there's a point where Brolin looks himself in the mirror, and my God, is he ripped. He's 50 years old. 50 years old.
There's still time for all of us.
Yeah,
there is. 50 years young. That's what I say.
Thanks, Val Dinigan. I mean, he's looking himself in the mirror, and you can see a bit where he fondles his... I mean, his chest, I don't know if that's a boob. His whatever that is.
Moob.
And
it's a peck, I believe.
It's a peck, his man peck. And he goes, ooh, a little bit. But not in a sexy way. Not in a sexy way.
Actually doesn't happen.
He doesn't. But, you know, but he kind of goes, but he
Chris's re-edit.
He goes,
is he circling his nipple with his. None of this happens.
And then he goes, have you not seen that version?
What version is this film did you watch?
No? Okay. No. Anyway, but he goes like, ooh, rather than, you know, to show that the technovirus is still
like
advancing.
He feels it, right?
He feels it, yeah. Thanks, Helen. He feels his, I think it's his left nipple. I'm not sure.
With a sort of feather duster thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
Isn't it a riding crop?
There's a tassel on there, I think.
Anyway, you were talking about the technovirus.
I don't know what I was talking about. But
so we all like Cable.
We like
all like Cable. We are all Cable, like
Cable
guys. And a girl.
Tidy. We liked Cable. What, and we've mentioned Domino already, but I thought she was so good. This Sazie Beats in this is fantastic. Jimbo, you say something good.
I've got nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing.
I really enjoyed how they had Deadpool saying how uncinematic her power is. Mm. As she provides, you know, some of the most big money moments,
and that's
the film,
a great sequence,
which was a really cool sequence. So, and it was also a really good demonstration of the power of luck, which has always been, you know, there's a few characters in the comics who have that, and they've been able to demonstrate it well. So, they explained that quite neatly on the big screen quite fast, which I thought was good.
Because Longshot, also from the Mojoverse, has that as his power.
He does indeed. I thought Sazie Beats was fantastic. Her attitude was brilliant. And one of my favourite moments is that shirt cocky moment when Cable walks in behind them and he expresses disgust at Deadpool's tiny genitals, and Weasel, Domino and Deadpool basically all go, okay, 1, 2, 3, and then we'll say our joke, and they all say slightly different jokes at the same time. And just her sense of her comic timing, her exasperation with the idiot boys. Helen, I can see why you identified so well with Domino in this
movie.
Can't think why.
No, but she is really funny as well, which is nice, because again, historically the problem of being the one girl in the team of boys is that you don't get to do the banter. And I think that she gets some of the banter, which is kind of nice. Even just the, you know, the scene in the taxi where Deadpool's explaining, and that's why Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is pure pornography. And she's just sitting there going, I should have stayed in school. Yeah. You know,
I should have got an Uber.
Next time I get an Uber. Yeah.
And she has fun moments at the end, you know, when she's trying to save the kids, the orphan kids, and goes, I need a bus right about now. I need a bus to get you out. And then a bus slams through the window.
Yeah.
And she just goes, orphans and onto the bus. She's great. Can't wait to see more of her. Interesting approach to the character as well, given that there's a history between Domino and Cable in the comic books. Domino, I always get the impression, much older in the comic books than Sazie Beats is. But there's real room for them to grow as characters. And just want to see more of her.
Spinoff?
Well, not right now, thanks, Nick.
They couldn't call it Domino because we already have an amazing film called Domino.
My name is Domino Harvey, and I'm a bounty hunter.
There we go. Had to get that out of the way.
Did you see on social media, which I found slightly disheartening, that there seemed to be an obsession with the fact that she didn't shave her armpits for the role?
Well, I've also seen sort of women's sites, you know, cheering this. I just don't think it's relevant either way. So
I didn't notice, and I don't care.
I didn't notice, actually, either.
But. Nick, did you notice, and do you care?
I thought about bringing it up, but I didn't.
Why? Because it made you so angry?
No, it doesn't seem relevant.
No, yeah, it's not. Pointless. So it's not relevant.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. All good.
Okay, so Fats Coleman asks, or says rather, this is more of an observation, the post-credit time travel sting, whilst fun, totally devalued what little emotional weight the film had tried to muster by effectively resurrecting Vanessa and undoing the deaths of at least some of the X-Force, only Peter, which is another thing I really like, that he goes back and only saves Peter. Deadpool might knowingly wink at the weightlessness of some mainstream superhero fare, but with Infinity War and Black Panther knocking it out of the park with deep feels and hard-won character moments, Deadpool's feeling increasing like an unfunny punchline to an old joke we've all heard several years ago.
Oh,
I just feel he's kind of got to the bottom of my problem with these films, and especially this one, in the... There's just this very uneasy push and pull in my mind between the silliness and the madness, and then trying to give it some real weight, emotional stuff. And I like it when it's being silly and daft and nothing matters and, you know, a kind of Naked Gun style, just firing jokes at you. But when it tries to be a real film, I don't know. I don't think that's what people want from Deadpool. I just don't think that character works with, you know, a serious plotline. And I had a bit of a problem, not just with the fridging, but the you know, the Eddie Marzan sort of the child abuse stuff as well, which I just thought was too heavy for this kind of film. Personally.
We haven't actually mentioned Ricky Baker.
We haven't. Because he is basically playing Ricky Baker.
He's playing Ricky Baker, and all due respect to him, love him in Hunt for the Wilder People. I did not love him in this.
I will always love him. He gets a free pass for life for Wilder People.
Yeah.
And I still liked him in this. I still think he's really, really, really sweet. Because I think he's the kind of kid that when you see him, you instantly worry about his welfare, basically. Yeah. Especially the way he presents himself in both those films. He's a delight in person, and he has a loving and supportive family, and I'm sure he doesn't come across that way at all. But on screen, this is the impression you get. You worry for him. He's just got that instantly empathetic quality where you're just like, I just want you to be okay. I mean, you seem like you might not be, and I hope you are. I thought he was great, actually. I got his sort of panic in the opening scenes as well as his anger. And then his adorable little schemes to get ahead in prison, which horribly, horribly backfire.
But ultimately saved Deadpool.
I mean, I guess so.
He keeps that pen in his prison wallet.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that saves Deadpool.
That is a thing that is a thing. Also in the prison scene, we of course have Black Tom. Now,
that really made me laugh.
Here's my thing, right? Ireland does not have a wealth of superheroes in either the Marvel or the DC universe. We have basically one. And
Banshee.
That's Banshee. And they made him American in the X-Men universe. They took away our one superhero. Cultural appropriation, right?
And then killed him off screen. By the way, that was an X-Men Days of Future Past spoiler special. Just for anyone who wasn't keeping track.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry about that. Anyway, so they took away our one superhero, but they keep his rubbish brother? What? Come on. There has to be some kind of parody here.
It's fine. Again, I think he was meant to have a much bigger role, but that was my favourite running gag throughout the film. I don't think this film has dialogue as good as that shit spackled Muppet Fart, or but the constant references that Deadpool thinks that, are you right, Helen? Am I boring you?
It's 6:30 on a Friday, man. Fair enough. I'm supposed to be in bed.
That's okay. What sort of life do you lead? Is my monastic one, clearly.
Are you kidding? 6:30 on a Friday, where better to be than in bed?
Well, this got sexy in a hurry. But I really like the running gag. You know, there's that great joke where he's trying to remember his name. Is it Black Tim? Black Evan? I don't know. All I remember is that he was African American. And, you know, what's your superpower? Cultural appropriation. But then my favorite one is to Cable. Yeah. You killed Black Tom, you racist son of a bitch.
Genuinely hilarious. I really enjoyed that.
And then Deadpool's death scene at the end. In his fourth hour, he goes, Deadpool, goes, Cable, I hope that in time you will learn to judge people not by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I mean, who said Deadpool couldn't quote Martin Luther King Jr.?
He proved them wrong.
Amazing stuff.
His death scene generally I found very amusing.
Yeah.
Very entertaining.
Really good. I honestly, and I said this to Ryan Reynolds, I could have watched another 10 minutes of that. I could have watched another 10 minutes of him pretending to die and then pissing people off and then coming back to life again. I mean, again, it's Python-esque. You know, John Cleese has a scene very similar to that in Shrek the Third. Well, this is a Shrek
Alan
the Third
Partridge.
Spoiler special, by the way. Alan Partridge.
Alan Partridge
as well.
And Alpha Papa.
Yeah. It's an Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa spoiler special all of a sudden. Yeah, it's true. But the way they execute it is really, really funny. And, you know, that's. Give props to Ryan Reynolds, who I think is just born to play this role.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think Reynolds has been very involved in the marketing of this film, and some of the stuff they've done is genius. Whether it be Celine Dion, the David Beckham thing was really funny.
Which was the David Beckham thing?
Where he turns up at David Beckham's house and apologises for making fun of him in the film, and then Beckham starts slagging off his films, and they sing together. It's funny. Watch it.
Okay.
I can't really do it justice. That was really enjoyable. And one of the guys from The Office, who's in the States at the moment, sent pictures of all the Fox movies have been re-sleeved. So
yes.
Deadpool's in all of them. So you've got an X-Men one where Deadpool is all of the X-Men. You've got the Predator one where it's Deadpool on the front.
Oh, yes, you've got Logan, and it's instead of being Laura's hand in Logan's hand, it's Deadpool's.
It's Deadpool's. And so it's all the Fox films are Deadpool.
Even Office Space. That's a deep
one. I know. It's amazing. One. And they're just out of season. And even the back cover, it's Deadpool copy. Like, they put so much effort into it. I think it's absolutely genius. I got sent a Royal Wedding commemorative plate in the post today, and it is Cable and Deadpool on it. And it is amazing.
That sounds like
and
the best
It
thing.
Came gold embossed with a sort of like calligraphy all over it. I opened it all up, and it had like a wax stamp on the back with DP on it. And you open it, and it's a Deadpool plate.
That is amazing. Yeah, why don't I work in the office anymore?
It was pretty cool. But I mean, they really have pulled out the stops on this one. So fair play to them.
All right, let's bring this bad boy home. We pretty much covered all the talking points, but we do have a couple more questions. Very, very quickly, Kobe Omanaka of the Wire Stripped podcast asks, "What was your favorite gag in the film? The ones that made me giggle like an idiot are, and this is Kobe's suggestions: the X-Men closing the door, readdressing the timeline at the end, shooting Ryan Reynolds in the head, and shirt cocking."
For me, it was shooting Ryan Reynolds in the head.
Yeah.
This is it. You've made it. You're in the big time.
Yeah, that's genius. I love that. That and the Black Tom, the running gag, the Black Tom gag just destroyed me.
Da-da-da-da. Okay, and then I think the last question, and this will be one that we can tie into Deadpool's future as well. @35who asks, would you prefer to see Deadpool integrated into the MCU, presuming, of course, that the Disney takeover of Fox goes through, or the X-Meniverse, or stay relatively separated from concrete tie-ins?
Separate. It wouldn't work tonally. It doesn't work at all. But I don't think the X-Universe as it exists will ever be part of the MCU, even if the Disney-Fox thing goes through. They will reboot the X-Universe and adapt it for the MCU. They won't take what they currently have.
I am inclined to agree. And I think even if it's bought by Disney, I don't think that will necessarily change what Deadpool does, which is to continue to make fun of all sides, which I hope he does. I would say, in terms of future films, Reynolds joked at the fan screening that this was originally going to be called Deadpool 2, Escape from Unicorn Mountain, and I very much hope that they can get that in next time. And I don't care if they justify the title, they probably shouldn't, but they can do better than simply Deadpool 3.
Wow.
I think they should go straight to Deadpool 4. Skip out 3.
See, that would be good.
That would mess with people. Good, right? I like it.
See, I genuinely think that this should have been called Untitled Deadpool Sequel, which is what it was on the IMDb for the longest time.
Yeah.
And apparently, I interviewed Reynolds for the magazine and he said they did toy with it and they did toy with Electric Boogaloo and all those fun titles, but ultimately they went lazy writing Deadpool 2. But it should have been something just to see people, because people walking into a cinema and going, one for Untitled Deadpool sequel, please. Or two, because they could have friends. Would have been really, really fun. But this character, because we know they're doing X-Force next, and it's Drew Goddard, and it's not going to be Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, and Reynolds doesn't seem to be involved in the writing, or in the writing of that. Obviously, he will be involved, as a producer and whatnot, and he is Deadpool. But is X-Force going to be a different film tonally? How is that going to work? Will Deadpool be breaking the wall? Will he be breaking the wall? Will he be breaking the fourth wall within that film?
Yes.
He has to, doesn't he? Or he's not Deadpool.
I mean, if you look at, again, the comics are probably a good guide on this, right? Even if he's in a group comic, he'll still sometimes turn around and address the audience. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't change what everyone else does. Yeah. So I feel like he'll just be doing what he does, but in a more minor capacity.
So a bit like Fleabag or something. It's just an imaginary camera there that he's turning to. He's not necessarily going to break the fourth. He doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was well articulated. It is now 6:41 on a Friday night, and I think it is time to wrap this bad boy up. That's it for our Deadpool 2 spoiler special. Our next spoiler special is going to be for
Solo.
Well, no, I just got to work on my dates here, because I actually think our Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom spoiler special with director J.A. Bayona and producer Colin Trevorrow is going to be up before our Solo spoiler special with director Ron Howard. So keep them peeled, but it will be Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and then probably Solo. So keep them peeled. As ever, the regular, the Mothership podcast is up every Friday. It features this, only more so. So I don't know if that's a deterrent or not. James hasn't yawned in that one yet, though, which is a mercy.
We normally do them a lot earlier than this.
Yeah.
If you look, everyone in this building has gone home.
That's because they have lives. We only have this.
Yeah, Friday night, what are we doing? We're wanging on about Deadpool 2 in a little room.
Thank God you said wanging. That is it for our Deadpool 2 supporter special. Thank you so much, of course, to James Dyer.
Thanks.
Nick DeSimlian.
Goodbye.
Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
And it's goodbye for me. I'm off to shirt cock it down Oxford Circus over Friday night. Nobody's going to notice.
Chris, as your lawyer.
No, honestly, Helen, it's a damning indictment of my own genitalia. Nobody's going to notice. On that note, thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.